journey would lead me to a truth that I never intended to find.
A great pillar of the community was killed by a man who had been deported at least twice.
The public would be outraged if they knew the truth.
I found how much Americans are being lied to regarding our immigration policies at the border. My friends, my industry, even my family, all rallied against the final message of this film. All credits had to be hidden for fear of retribution. If you care about the future of America, you should watch America's Forgotten.
Go to SaleNow.com to buy or rent today. For additional savings, enter promo code Kirk. SaleNow.com, promo code Kirk.
Both were prosecutors in the Clark County District Attorney's Office, each with 25 years of experience. One was chief of the Special Victims Unit, the other chief of the Homicide Unit. Both dedicated, both respected. Together, they are Craig Hendricks and Frank Como, the Vegas Dream Team for criminal defense you need in your corner. Call 702-222-9999 or visit VegasDreamTeam.com, a division of DeCastro Verde Law Group.
This is Lee Habib, and I get asked all the time why we do all of those segments on Our American Stories about people who found the American dream. And we do it because it's true. This country has great stories to tell, and we tell them on this station every night, because one thing I've learned is this: there's an American story in all of us. Join me for Our American Stories right here.
Heard nightly, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon, only on AM 670.
Broadcasting live from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, AM 670 KMZQ Las Vegas. Locally owned and operated by Kemp Broadcasting and Digital Outdoor.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. President Biden and Vice President Harris plan to meet with Asian American community leaders in Georgia in the wake of this week's deadly shootings at three Atlanta area massage parlors. Atlanta Deputy Police Chief Charles Hampton Jr. says investigators believe shooting suspect Robert Aaron Long had visited the two Atlanta massage parlors where four women of Asian descent were killed.
I would just say that, unfortunately, they were at that location. I can't say that he specifically targeted those individuals. But what I will say is that he did frequent, as the question keeps coming up, that he did frequent those two locations within Atlanta.
Four other victims were killed at a spa in suburban Cherokee County shortly before the Atlanta attacks.
On this vote, the yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The nomination is confirmed. Under the previous order, the motion to reconsider is considered made and laid upon the table, and the president will be immediately notified of the Senate's actions.
Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii announcing Senate approval of President Biden's choice for Health Secretary Javier Becerra. All Republicans, with the exception of Maine Senator Susan Collins, opposed the nomination. Becerra was criticized for his support for abortion while California Attorney General. Others were critical for him not being a doctor, but instead a lawyer. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the U.S. is working on the mechanics of loaning millions of AstraZeneca vaccine doses to Canada and Mexico.
Our first priority remains vaccinating the U.S. population. The pandemic knows no borders, and ensuring our neighbors can contain the virus is mission critical to ending the pandemic.
On Wall Street, the Dow down by 153 points, the NASDAQ plunged 409, the S&P lower by 58. More on these stories at townhall.com.
A heart attack? He was 47. What about Janice and the kids? Do they have life insurance?
No.
Call SelectQuote now and get the insurance your family needs at a price you can afford.
In minutes, SelectQuote found John, 45, in excellent health, a $500,000 policy for only $29 a month. And his wife, Ann, 43, in excellent health, a $500,000 policy for only $21 a month.
At SelectQuote, we comparison shop some of the most trusted insurance companies in America to find you the best rate in minutes. And it's free.
For your free quote, call 1-800-644-1331. That's 1-800-644-1331. Or go to selectquote.com. That's 1-800-644-1331.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hey, Kevin Wall here. Are you tired of watching your insurance rates go up year after year and not understanding why? If you haven't looked at your auto and homeowners insurance policies in the last 2 to 3 years, it's time to do it now. And my friends Steve and Amy Miller at Blue Sky Insurance are the folks to help you. With one phone call to Blue Sky, they can shop your policies with the highest rated carriers in Nevada. And they don't just do auto and homeowners insurance. They offer solutions for motorcycles, RVs, ATVs, boats, rental properties, commercial businesses, and more. Blue Sky Insurance is a brokerage, which means Steve and Amy represent you, not the insurance company. Making sure your family is protected is their top priority, and they help you do that at a fair price. I've been a client of Blue Sky for 3+ years. Their customer service, it's incredible. Call or text Blue Sky Insurance, 702-410-8020. That's 702-410-8020, or check them out online at blueskylv.com.
It's 3:04. This is your KMZQ News Flash. I'm Jim Dallas. Eligibility for the state's vaccination program is about to really open up as Governor Sisolak announces all Nevadans 16 and older will be eligible for the COVID-19 shot beginning on April 5th, with those underlying medical conditions able to get the vaccine beginning next week. The latest plan puts the Silver State ahead of President Biden's push to make shots available for everyone before May 1st. The governor reminded us this opening up eligibility doesn't mean everyone will be able to immediately get an appointment. Still dependent on the allocation of doses that the state gets from the federal government. More than 360,000 Nevadans, more than 11% of the state's population, has been fully vaccinated as of this week. Well, Las Vegas's jobless rate has dropped below double digits for the first time since the pandemic closed down much of the state a year ago. 9.9% of the Las Vegas workforce was jobless in January. That's down from 10.4% in December. Reno's unemployment rate in January was 4.9%. Carson City's was 5.6%. Las Vegas's jobless rate began 2020 at just 3.9% before shooting up to 34% in April. That was when Governor Sisolak ordered the closure of non-essential businesses.
KMZQ On-Time Traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers. Right now, come in for a synthetic blend oil change for just $17.95.
Watch out for a multi-car crash. That's Interstate 15 northbound at Charleston. It's partially blocking the off-ramp there, 15 north at Charleston. Also, some slow flows, 15 south at Symphony. 515 westbound, that's at Eastern as you work your way into the Spaghetti Bowl, and reduce speeds, 215 east at Valley Verde.
I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it. The belief that a nation must serve its citizens will not dwindle, but instead only grow stronger by the day. As long as the American people hold in their hearts deep and devoted love of country, then there is nothing that this nation cannot achieve. Check it out! I go from this majestic place with a loyal and joyful heart, an optimistic spirit, and a supreme confidence that for our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
Fun lovers and truth seekers, you have come to the right place. It's live and local for a Thursday, inching ever closer to the weekend. How many of you survived green beer? Man, every place I went last night was packed. It's like people had waited a full year from the Sisolak shutdown, and they were ready to party last night, and they did. Good for you. I hope everybody was safe. A lot of us have been tracking the battle against big tech. So many people that I know have been impacted
by big tech throwing its weight around, denying us our First Amendment rights. And the question, you know, and by the way, we've had our share of congressional hearings where they bring the head of Facebook and Twitter and all of that, and they grill them and they embarrass them publicly, but they keep going about their merry business. The question is, how do we fight back? How do we as citizens throw our weight around? Joining us now is Will Chamberlain. He is the senior counsel for the Internet Accountability Project, IAP. He joins us. Will, thank you so much for joining us. Tell me what IAP is.
So IAP is a nonprofit aimed to fight big tech abuses, and it comes from a conservative perspective. Normally, if you looked at think tanks in D.C., you'd have either liberal think tanks that might be a little skeptical of government power or you know, kind of conservative think tanks that basically made excuses for Google and Facebook and Twitter no matter what they did. We look at things differently. We think there's obviously a place in conservative politics. I mean, it's demonstrated by how popular this position is to say that, guess what? You should have the same right to speak in a public park that you do on Facebook. I'm sorry, you should have the same right to speak on Facebook and Twitter that you do in a public park, that these places are the public square, and if you don't have access to them, then your free speech rights are being curtailed, among other abuses that big tech has. So we're a nonprofit that fights to make the case for constraining big tech from a conservative perspective.
Your organization, Internet Accountability Project, or IAP, is fighting against big tech. Is this a bipartisan issue? I know big tech has favored the left. They've denied folks on the right, Wayne Allen Root, Megan Barth, both are friends of mine, both are prominent national figures, and they have the ones, they're the ones that have been trampled upon. Is this, though, a Democrat or a Republican issue?
Right now, it sadly is certainly more a Republican issue than Democrats. You know, because it's funny, you would think something where you point out a corporate abuse, Democrats would be the first to recognize it. But oddly enough, it seems like Democrats have found their inner libertarian all of a sudden when it comes to big tech censoring their opponents. Oh, they're a private company. They can do whatever they want. Now, there are some principled liberals out there who do realize that this is about as clear-cut an abuse of corporate power as you can see. Something like Amazon wielding its 80% market share in bookselling and then deciding to cut off a heritage scholar. Or, for example, Google and Apple using their 99.8% share of the mobile operating system market and kicking Parler off the internet, basically. These are really dramatic events that should any normal sort of consistent, you know, principled liberal when it comes to, you know, proper corporate governance and constraining the power of corporations should obviously find these abuses appalling, and yet they don't.
A lot of us believe in less regulation, but in this particular case, more regulation would be needed. The equivalent I've heard is, the way we ended up treating the phone company, and we made the phone companies break up. Is that what we're looking at here? Is that what it's going to take to clean this thing up?
I mean, I don't think you need necessarily regulation in the sense of having a giant, or, you know, a new government agency. People, when they think regulation, they think, oh, we're going to have a bureaucracy and they're going to be a speech police. That's not how I look at it. I think this can be solved with an analog to civil rights legislation. And the way that works is there are regulatory agencies that deal with it, but there's also what's called a private right of action. So if you're a citizen who's discriminated against on the basis of race, you can walk into court and get an injunction and force whoever's discriminated against you to stop. And this also already works in the free speech context. So if you go on a public university campus and the university shuts you down, you can walk into court and get an injunction. There doesn't need to be a First Amendment agency. It's just that's the law. And if you're wronged by a government actor right now, that's a tort and you can sue for it. We should just make it so that if you're, you know, Facebook and Twitter are essentially governed by the same rules and have to be a public square.
Tell me what the options are down the road, and I'm talking about legislatively. And by the way, is that an arena that you're working in right now? There've been hearings, but nothing's happened.
So, I mean, obviously, we are aiming at legislation. There are a number of options, right? One is a sort of civil rights style pieces of legislation that again creates a private right of action for censored users. If you know, the idea here being that we'd make a law that says if you have your content taken down and it was lawful speech, you then have the right to walk into court and sue Facebook and Twitter and get the content restored. Oddly enough, Poland is already putting in place legislation like this. What Greg Abbott recommended in Texas, he's already pushing for legislation at the state level that would replicate this. So we're looking at both state and federal legislation to do that. There are other options. You know, you could look at an antitrust remedy, trying to break up the various companies that have gotten too big in the hopes that increased competition will actually lead to there being a real conservative alternative. You could do some reform of Section 230 to make it so that their liability protection that they get there is tied to them acting like a real platform where they're not taking a side in the culture wars or in politics. And if they decide to use that liability protection, which no one else has, to take a side, then you could say, okay, well then we're not going to stand for that. There are a variety of options, but ultimately I think that, you know, the most important thing is what should the end goal be for conservatives? You can speak freely on the internet, you don't feel like there's a sort of Damocles hanging over your head. And I think that's the goal we should be aiming towards, and that's the goal we at IAP are trying to work towards.
And again, Will Chamberlain joining us, Senior Counsel, Internet Accountability Project, or IAP. What is there that citizens can do? I know that as you relaunched your new website, you're trying to cultivate a grassroots effort. What is it that all of us can do?
Well, at the local level, part of the problem here is that it's still not anathema for conservative politicians to take money from Google and Facebook and Twitter. You know, National Review just yesterday is publishing ads from Google. I mean, that should stop. It would be like taking money from George Soros. These companies are adversarial to the conservative movement. They've demonstrated that by deplatforming our authors and our influencers. That shouldn't be tolerated, and it should be seen as forbidden. And yet, I mean, but the problem is we have a lot of legislators doing that. So at a local level, I think pressuring for, you know, your own representatives to stop taking money from big tech companies, and then secondly, pressuring your state legislators to do something model along what the lines of what Greg Abbott is doing in Texas to protect your right to speak on the internet, I think that's the way you can go forward.
And is this going to be done on the national level, at the state level, the local level? How is this going to work?
Well, I don't think this could possibly work at the local level. At the state level, it could work because, you know, all of the various states, many states have consumer protection rules and legislation that their state attorneys general enforce. You could see, you know, that's what's happening in Florida and Texas, where the governors are pushing legislation that would protect their citizens from unfair social media censorship. Now, there's a potential roadblock because, remember, there's federal Section 230, which grants a lot of immunity to the tech companies, and state law can't conflict with federal law. That's the way our system works. So it's hard to kind of write state law around the big federal immunity grants. So my guess is inevitably we're going to need a federal solution here, but that doesn't mean in the interim we shouldn't try to fix this at the state level and see if it holds up in court.
Now, a quick question, though. There is at least one bill that I've seen in Congress on the, what is it, the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. What do you know about it, and who's sponsoring it?
I'm not sure about who's sponsoring it. I think it's modeled on Australia's legislation. They recently passed a law that says that Facebook and Twitter need to compensate their news organizations if those news organizations have links to their content. And it was essentially trying to fix a distinct problem, which is the fact that journalism is almost impossible to turn a profit on when Facebook and Twitter are swallowing all the advertising revenue, and Google as well. So there's a legislative attempt to rebalance that. I don't have a strong position on that. I mean, on the one hand, I'm not a huge fan of our newspapers, and on the other hand, I'm not a huge fan of Google and Facebook, so I don't really know who I'm supposed to be rooting for in that instance. As a general matter, I think it's probably good for journalism broadly if they're able to make money doing the service, so I probably would side. I think the legislation has some merit to it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the most important thing that I really feel is important to fight for is just the right to be able to speak. I think it's the most basic American right, is the right to speak freely. It's the underlying thrust of the First Amendment, and it's effectively made meaningless if, you know, unilateral power to censor is held by Facebook and Twitter.
A lot of people I know, conservatives, have said, hey, why not, instead of complaining and going to Congress and all of that. What we ought to do is just leave big tech alone. And somebody, a billionaire, two billionaires, five billionaires, should start their own version of Google and their own version of Instagram. Is that a legitimate answer to the problem?
I mean, I hope so, but I strongly doubt it, especially after what happened to Parler. I mean, Parler, the company, tried that. They built their own social network. They had funding from the Mercers, well, a very wealthy family. And when it finally seemed like they might get some traction because President Trump was banned from Twitter, Apple, Google, and Amazon collectively decided to kick them off the internet. You know, you can say all you want about, well, set up your own social network, but Apple and Google have a 99.8 share of the American mobile operating system market, which means that if they collectively decide that they don't want your app on their app store, you have no access to mobile phones in the United States. And I mean, social media is predicated off of mobile phones. Something like 90% of social media use happens on mobile phones. So, I mean, that's the ball game right there. That, I mean, and that's really the underlying threat. That's why we have antitrust laws in the first place, to prevent against precisely this sort of monopolization. And so, I mean, when you have a monopoly, the idea of being able to compete it away, it just doesn't really work that well.
What are you asking John Q Public to do? I know you're trying to create a grassroots effort. Are you looking to raise money? Are you looking to have people sign petitions? What is it you're asking of people?
Well, I mean, obviously, it would be very nice to, you know, support the organization. IAP is, you know, right now it's a very lean nonprofit, but we've had a lot of impact. I look at, you know, me personally, I've been very agitating on Twitter and in my, you know, publication Human Events about this issue for going on 2-3 years now, and to see how dramatically public opinion on the right has shifted. It used to be a completely fringe position to say these companies needed to be regulated, that speaking on the internet should be seen as a civil right. Now it's a very mainstream position. So we've had a lot of impact. We can have more of it with more donations to the Internet Accountability Project, where I actually work pro bono. I don't take any money, but it's a cause I really, really believe in. And the other thing is, I think, you know, getting involved at the local level, at state level, really pressuring legislators to take this concern seriously. Because I think that, you know, there are still some legislators out there who think, oh, you know, this isn't that big a deal, but they're not realizing that they're there to protect their citizens' rights, and their citizens' rights are being violated. So,
again, joining us, Will Chamberlain, special counsel, or senior counsel, excuse me, Internet Accountability Project. Is this going to be a long-term battle? Is this going to be something where the war is won in a year or two or three?
I mean, it's probably a medium-term battle. I think, you know, ultimately, you look at the effect of how, I mean, I think of civil rights. Civil rights is the best analog for what this might look like, because, you know, you had private companies discriminating on the basis of race in the 1960s, and the Civil Rights Act didn't instantly solve that problem. But the Civil Rights Act plus, you know, a couple decades of litigation and court decisions and enforcement has really radically changed the landscape, and Jim Crow is completely unthinkable and bizarre in 2020, when it wasn't at all when that was the way the world was in 1964, for example. So I think the way to look at this is, if you get the right laws passed and change the incentive for these tech companies, where they can look at somebody who's demanding they censor some voice that's too fringe for them, and if the tech companies can say, well, if we do that, we'll be sued and we'll lose, so we're not going to do that. If you create that incentive structure for these companies, I think you could pretty quickly solve the problem and suddenly make it so, okay, you really are free to speak your mind on the internet again, which was the promise of the internet in the first place, and really should be restored.
Now, logic tells me, and the free market tells me, that people oftentimes vote with their feet, and in this case, with their smartphone. And I guess my question is, if Google lost half its audience or its clients, I'm guessing that would hurt them. Would it change them? Would it cause them to change?
I mean, possibly, but possibly not. I think, you know, we on the right in general have been conditioned to be very skeptical of arguments about monopoly as a result of kind of 30 years of who the intellectual leaders have been. And so we've been, well, you thought, oh, well, generally monopolies are only bad if they're created by government, et cetera. But the problem is there are some industries where monopolies do arise. And, I mean, let's look back at one of the first big bipartisan pieces of this type of regulation. You go all the way back to the railroads in the 1880s. Think about, if you're the guy who owns the railroad from New York to Chicago, well, building a railroad's really hard, and somebody might get to it in 10 to 15 years, but in the interim, you have this monopoly, And so people, the railroad owners were discriminating against various customers and, you know, giving favors to their buddies and charging exorbitant rates to others because they could. And that ended up leading to a bipartisan regulation, Republicans and Democrats agreeing that, no, this is nonsense. We're going to set up a regulation system so that this discrimination ends. I think, you know, you can say a competitor can just arise, but it's very hard to see how you compete with Google and Apple in building a mobile operating system. I mean, that's an incredible technical challenge and an industrial challenge as well. There's a reason Amazon is crushing everybody in the retail space. These are dominant companies that have demonstrated that winner-take-all effects are real and that they can get meaningful and serious monopolies over large chunks of our economy. And as a result, like, that suddenly has very serious implications if they then decide to use that monopoly power to silence people and to censor people.
I want to ask you in our final minute, is this something where conservatives and progressives might band together? The whole notion of big tech, is this something that might bring an odd couple together ultimately?
Absolutely. I mean, and there's been plenty of instances of progressives being censored. Some of the more principled progressives out there, people like Glenn Greenwald, have been very good on this issue, recognizing some of the underlying problems. Matt Stoller is another one. But there's a fundamental problem. Could progressives benefit from conservative censorship because then conservative ideas aren't as promulgated as widely in the public square? So the truly ruthless realpolitik Democrats out there are perfectly happy to suddenly become these radical libertarians when it comes to tech censorship. I hope that the principled people will win out, but I wouldn't bet on it necessarily.
If folks want to help you out at IAP, how do they do it? Website? Tell us about that.
So let me check. I'm pretty sure it's theiap.org. Let me actually make sure. Thought that I would know the exact place my own. Yes, that's correct. So theiap.org. theiap.org. That's the website. You can get involved. You can donate. You can look at our key issues and our team. The other way is just, you know, follow us all on Twitter. I'm Will Chamberlain on Twitter. You can follow me. That's where I post most of my regular content. And, you know, other people, Josh Hammer, Mike Davis, the other team members, you know, join us on there and support and share our content when we create it.
Will do. Will Chamberlain, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks for all you're doing. We'll keep in touch, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Will Chamberlain, senior counsel for Internet Accountability Project. Keep an eye on that. Stay where you are. More to do as we continue. It is Thursday, a beautiful Thursday on AM 670 KMZQ.
It's Las Vegas' best local talk. Heidi Harris talks the politics of life. Weekdays 9 to noon with Bill O'Reilly's 15-minute news and comment at 11:45. Kevin Wall drives you home 3 to 6 a.m. 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
For over 30 years, Ichabod's Lounge has provided incredible food, gaming, and nightly entertainment. Hey, Kevin Wall here. They've been here to serve you through good times and bad. Now, a lot of Vegas restaurants have been forced to close due to the governor's latest restrictions. But Francois and his amazing staff at Ichabod's Lounge aren't going anywhere, regardless of what may lie ahead for us. And at Ichabod's Lounge, your safety is their number one priority. So you'll see bartenders and servers wiping down services again and again. Even in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, Ichabod's is ready to serve you. But they know that some of you are reluctant to get out, and they get it. That's why Ichabod's Lounge features their incredible menu for both dine-in and carry-out. Call 702-451-2323. 702-451-2323. Ichabod's Lounge, featuring old-school Vegas atmosphere and one of the top gaming bars in Las Vegas. Ichabod's Lounge, open 24/7. Vintage Vegas dining, gaming lounge, and piano bar on East Flamingo at Pecos.
Do you suffer from aches and pains? Have you considered trying cannabis, but you don't want to smoke? Evergreen Organics has a solution for you. Delicious edibles. Evergreen Organics produces high-end infused edibles such as cookies, brownies, chocolates, and gummies. Evergreen Organics culinary-trained chefs combine the finest premium cannabis and ingredients that are handcrafted daily for your ultimate experience. To learn more about Evergreen Organics and where you can find their products, check out evergreenorganics.com. Keep out of reach of children for use only by adults 21 years of age and older.
Laborers Union Local 872 is committed to ensuring the safety and health of their workforce. Here are five recommendations to keep you and everyone safe on the job site. Perform a self-assessment before arriving on the job site. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Keep your distance. Adhering to the regulations and limit large group interactions. Laborers Union Local 872.